This week's mailbag comes to us from Robin. I just want to let all of you know that Organize 365 is about to rescue another family. My mom just received a terminal diagnosis. My siblings and I are on round-the-clock care for her. In addition to her care, we are each choosing which household need to take on, and I chose paper. She's been sick for a while, so I know I don't have to tell you what that already looks like. This will be hard, and I won't do it perfectly. And with this system, I will be able to do it. We've also been using the medical binder. Of course, we've had to personalize much of it. However, the structure and the red slash pockets have saved us. Thanks to the podcast on ADD, one of my sisters checked it out and has been diagnosed and treated for ADD. This also contributes to our ability to take care of business during this period of life's unexpected events. I'm still following Instagram and finding out what the weather is like in Cincinnati, and I look forward to it every day. This next 100 days will certainly not be what I expected, but it's a lifelong membership. Thank goodness. There aren't words to express my gratitude. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, team of amazing women. You are making a difference. So much love and appreciation sent your way. Thank you so much for your kind words, Robin. Do you have an Organize 365 success story? We would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at lisa@organize365.com and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organize 365.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. I love when you can back up with science why what we're doing in Organize 365 is really moving the needle on helping women take back their house and get organized once and for all. I was so excited when Rachel reached out to me and told me about the trans-theoretical model. At least, I think that's what it's called. She'll explain all of it to us in this podcast episode. But she was following me on Instagram and she said, oh, Lisa, your health and wellness journey is perfectly following the trans-theoretical model. And she explained to me how there are these different steps in the model and how I was going from one to the other. And it was very obvious because I was so new at working out. I immediately thought, yes, let's come on the podcast and let's explain this. But then when you are watching me like a baby deer trying to take its first steps in exercising or working out or whatever it is we're calling that I'm doing this summer, how do we relate that to our organizational journey? You know, I'm further along on my organizational journey. I've been at this publicly for 7.5 years, but really my whole entire life. And so I'm pretty organized now. So I love being able to step back to the beginning, try something new, and see exactly how these habits and systems are formed within us that help us to be successful on whatever goal that you have. So join in on this conversation that Rachel and I are having about the trans-theoretical model and figure out how we are all learning new things. Well, I am super excited to introduce you to Rachel. And honestly, Rachel, I'm just going to have you introduce yourself to the Organize 365 audience, and then I'll talk about how we met and what we're going to talk about.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you so much. My background is in health communication. I have a master's degree from Emerson College in collaboration with Tufts Medical School. And health communication is essentially using communication skills to support individuals and communities, greater populations, in making positive health behavior change. So that's my background, is in communication, and I have worked for several years in clinical research, helping to implement research studies that involve behavior change. And I currently now work for a private company, and I do one-on-one patient education and also community programming. So that's what I do for my professional life. I'm all about behavior change professionally, and I'm all about behavior change on my personal life too. And organization, I'm happy to deep dive into how I got to be interested in organizing, but this is, another one of my pet projects. I'm always listening to the newest trends and hot topics in organizing. So this is kind of a merger of my two favorite subjects.
Oh my gosh. So that is so interesting to me because as a teacher and as a mom, I know that what I teach works, but I don't know why. Mm-hmm. So when professionals like you reach out to me and you're like, oh, I see what you're doing in your wellness journey. This is what you said. You said, I see what you're doing in your wellness journey. It is the trans-theoretical model and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't know what you just said, but can you come on the podcast and explain it? And can we talk about it related to organizing? So what we're going to talk about a theory. What is a theory? Mm-hmm. Why do theories even work? And then we'll get into this specific theory.
Yeah, that's a great question. So a theoretical background, or sometimes they're called behavior change models, it's just the result of researchers, academics, writers, thinkers, stepping back and observing how we make changes in our behavior, why we make it, the steps we go through, the nuances we go through. They kind of jot these down in sort of a structure or framework that makes sense, and then they present it to others to use to either help, a group may use it to help a wider health population to change a behavior, or an individual may use it for their own personal change. So it's just a little insight into your own behavior change and a structure to help you identify where you are, where you want to be, and how to get from step A to step B.
So, okay, I love it.
Yeah.
So this is like, I was an early childhood education person. So we learned mm-hmm. Maslow's hierarchy mm-hmm. of needs. Like if you don't have food, then you don't care about anything after food. And if you have food and shelter and clothing, then we can get into like higher learning and education. Similar to like that?
Yeah. So that's like a very mm-hmm. simple behavioral change model. So once you have those concepts explained, mm-hmm. then you can use them as a tool to help others change. So you can identify, okay, this person isn't having, they having food instability. So that's why they're not completing their schoolwork on time. So let's focus on specific targeted actions that can move them from food instability to food stability, with the ultimate result of being getting their schoolwork in on time. That's kind of a simple way that a change model might be actually used to help individuals or help people lead happier lives.
Okay. I love it. Now you have to tell us, why are you obsessed with organization? And how did you find Organize 365?
So I am not a well-rounded person. I have one interest, and that interest is behavior change. Now, it's a very broad interest, so I can pretend like I have a lot of different interests. So I can say, oh, I'm really interested in productivity and in organizing. Oh, and then I also am more interested in health behavior change and exercise and all this stuff. And so it looks like I have a diverse group of interests, but at the core of it, it's all just behavior change, which is just like, that's my thing. So I do it in my professional life. I have an academic background in this. What I think would be helpful, so I'm the kind of person, I have this one particular model that we're going to talk about today, trans-theoretical model, and it's often called stages of change model. This is one model among many, but this model I always come back to. It's one of my favorites because it's so accessible, it's so easy to use. And I'm the kind of person that walks around thinking of each behavior that I do and thinking of where I am in the stages of change. Gosh. So what I can do is just walk you baby step through what this model is. As I walk through it, you're going to think of a million behaviors that you've gone through in your life and how you've walked up this ladder 10 million times before. It's going to really ring true, I think. And then after I've gone through those steps, then I can tell you how I walk through these steps in my organizing journey.
Okay, I love it. And you were able to really see this play out like kindergarten baby step when I started mm-hmm. talking about health and wellness. Now, I know I've triggered a whole bunch of people in the Organize 365 audience. They're like, weight loss has nothing to do with health. Stop equating those. You don't, you're body shaming, body images. I apologize in advance. Like, I'm just trying to show you something I'm terrible at, and I'm taking baby steps. So it looks like a baby giraffe looking to walk if you watch me try to do anything health and fitness related, because I've put zero effort into it whatsoever. I'm not saying people should lose weight. I'm not saying that what I'm doing is like the ultimate thing. I'm just trying, because I've been doing organizing publicly for almost 8 years. I'm kind of at the top of that little model we're going to talk about. It's harder to see. It's harder to follow me because you see me constantly in ultra productivity. But if I show you a new area, like trying to do a push-up, which is hysterical, then you're like, oh, great. She's not perfect at everything. As a matter of fact, she doesn't even realize how many steps you should take. And so it's easier for you to see that I go through this process as well. And Rachel reached out to me because she's like, oh, yeah, obvious. You're going through this. Let me show you exactly how you're going through this in health and wellness. This is not a health and wellness podcast. Don't worry. We're all about organizing. But sometimes it's easier to see these steps in something you're not good at than in something that you are an expert in.
Yep.
Okay. So you're going to break this down for us. Let's start with stage one. What is stage one?
Well, let me give a real quick overview to what this is and how to think about it. And it's very simple. Okay. So like I said, the technical term for this is trans-theoretical model, but really the working term, the layman's term for this is stages of change, because it just talks about all the stages that you go through when you're trying to make a change. So if you're envisioning, I want you to just envision in your mind a ladder that has 1, 2, 3, 4 rungs on it, or a staircase that has 4 steps on it. And you're standing on the ground looking at this ladder or looking at this set of stairs. The ground underneath your feet where you're standing right now represents where you are before you make any sort of behavior change. And the top of that ladder, the top of that staircase represents where you are after you've made that behavior change. It's part of your life. It's not something you have to think about all the time. There's no resistance. You're there. And each step of that staircase or rung of that ladder is a stage or phase or set of actions that you need to go through in order to get from where you are to where you want to be at the top of that ladder. That's all it is. Very basic. Now, each of those steps, each of those rungs has a name. If you want to, in this model, we use these technical terms. Health communication uses a lot of jargon. Behavior change uses a lot of jargon. So I'll give you the jargon and then I'll break it down to what it actually means. So when you're standing on the ground in front of that ladder, you are in the pre-contemplation phase. This means that maybe you're not aware that a problem exists. You don't know what your blood pressure is, so you can't know if it's in the good zone or the bad zone. You've never been in an organized environment, so you can find your keys, you can find your wallet. What is there more to it? Maybe there's a little denial going on sometimes. In your deep down, somewhere that a change needs to be made, but you're just kind of pushing it down, ignoring it. Whatever the reason is, this is not something that's on your radar. It's just not even on there. The first step of that staircase, if you took that step up, would be to move from pre-contemplation into contemplation. So that first step is something happened to put this item on your radar. You went to the doctor and the doctor gave you a test result and said, hey, this is a problem. Or, you realize that you have no idea, you collect all your scissors together and you have 15 pairs of scissors throughout the house and you have no idea, and it's just such a wake-up call. Something happens to put this on your radar and you start to ask the question, is this something that I need to address? Is this something that if I decided to address it, I could do? Are the pros and cons of taking this action, do they outweigh the pros and cons of not taking action? What action would I take? What does that look like? Is there action that can be? You start asking all these questions to try and determine if this is something you need to pay attention to. And some folks, they stop there. Hey, I have 15 pairs of scissors, but I can find my sunglasses, my wallet, my watch. That's all I need. And they, that's it. They hang out in contemplation. you can always move from there forward at any time. You can spend as much time as you want in contemplation. You know, some researchers will say, oh, they'll assign like a 6-month window to these things. But for you and I, like just thinking about our own behavior change, you can just hang out in contemplation as long as you want, because that's how real life works, right? Now, if you did decide something happened.
Okay, before we go forward, I'm thinking of some good examples. Okay, so one of the things you told me was when we're standing on the ground in front of the staircase, some of the things I'm thinking in pre-contemplation are, like you're saying, people didn't realize that people lived an organized life. One of the things I would say that people say they learned from Organize 365 is that they didn't realize organization was a learnable skill. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you said was, once you learn something in pre-contemplation, you can't unlearn it. So like, you may choose not to get organized now, but you now know that Lisa said it's learnable, but now I'm choosing not to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's something maybe that other people need. That's great for them. Other people can do it. It's not something, at least at this moment in time, with this thought process, with this information, where I stand right now, I'm not going to take action on this. Maybe I don't know that if I took that extra step that I would be successful. It could be that. It could be I get that this is a problem. It's severe. It's impacting my life, but I don't think I can do it.
That, yes. Okay. The second time
when
I'm not in the podcast, but when I'm in real life with people and I say, I help people organize paper, the people say, I don't have any paper. They're in pre-contemplation. I don't have any paper. Every single person I meet, that is their, it's almost like, what's your name? Let me talk about paper. I don't have any paper. Like it's the gut reaction. Uh-huh. I don't have any paper. And then the more we have a conversation, they're either paperless, which, okay, or they are just not even going to, they have such a block about the fact that Americans have paper, they don't even want to have the conversation. However, almost always, by the time they're done conversing with me, they go, oh my gosh, I have so much paper. What are we going to do about paper? I didn't realize paper was an issue. I would say more so than physical organization. Paper organization, people believe we're paperless. We have a paperless society. I don't have paper. And then all of a sudden they realize, oh, shoot, I have paper. Like they didn't even realize it was an issue because they didn't think they had any. And then once they realize they have it, they like weren't purposely trying to be in pre-contemplation. I like shoved them into it and they're like, oh, darn. Like, what am I going to do about this paper?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Then for me personally, this is hilarious because you said you could go up and down these stairs. Mm-hmm. So my pre-contemplation is I'm bored. What am I going to do next? And this has come up multiple times. What I decide I'm going to do is to get a behavioral psychology PhD.
Whoa. I'm going to do. And that'll fill your time.
And then, right. So then I go into contemplation and I have so much fun swimming in contemplation. I look up all the colleges around me. I picked one in California. Oh yes.
Questionnaire.
So I picked one in California. UC has an amazing program. Mm-hmm. I've figured out Jeff is the person I would study under. He's not currently taking any people. Like I've even met with his colleagues. Like I have gone through contemplation like you wouldn't believe. And at the end of contemplation, every single time, my friend who does have a doctorate says, you don't have time for this. And you don't need that. Like you don't need these letters after your name, Lisa. You are already doing this work. Like, do you really want to do all this? And she said, and the number one thing we do in a PhD program is we undo everything you already know. And I'm like, oh. And so every time I get to contemplation and then I decide, no, I'm not going to get that PhD. But I've done this 3 times. And each time I do it, it's like a month long contemplation, pros and cons. Like I almost took the GRE last time. Like I get really close. And then I go back to pre-contemplation on that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay, so with the health and wellness, or whatever you people want to call it, Lisa not sitting in front of a computer, let's call it that. Mm-hmm. My pre-contemplation was, I should do something. Abby needs to work out, wants to work out. Our family needs to get healthier and move more. There's a really fun gym that has an outside pool. So we went to sign Abby up and I was like, oh, this looks really fun. I was getting ready for Embrace. And so I was like, well, I like walking on a treadmill. I can walk on a treadmill at a really nice gym. Mm-hmm. So I signed up. So I went from contemplation to, I guess, the next stage, which maybe is preparation. So for the gym, I went from Abby needs it to, okay, I want to do it myself too.
Yep.
Okay, yep, so we're beyond the PhD thing where I let it go. Now I'm ready to do the next thing. So what's the next stage?
Okay, so yeah. So well, let me pull up my notes here.
I think we're at preparation.
Yeah. So once you've decided, yep, this is something I'm gonna take a stab at this. I'm gonna work for it. Then you enter preparation. How am I gonna do this? What yes. strategy am I going to use? Where yes. am I going to go? What resources am I going to tap into? We just talked about it. In this phase, I would say, if you're not familiar with Gretchen Rubin's four tendencies, go yes. do a deep dive on your tendency. And I'm saying this as someone, this is my professional opinion, that yes. those four tendencies are such a, in the behavior change landscape, that's a game changer. Of all the theories and models that I've seen. So if you needed a professional opinion, it would be one of the main things I would say is really understand your tendency and how that you're going to leverage that to your advantage in the action stage when you move forward.
So, in preparation, I would say there's a great discussion going on in the Facebook group currently, may not be when this podcast airs, but someone had said, I want to do the 100-day program. I mean, it's not inexpensive. It's $497. And she's like, but my husband's not on board. What should I do? And the comments underneath are awesome. Like what people mm-hmm. have done in order to do the 100-day program. I will tell you what happens in our family. So here I am in this preparation stage. I am a questioner. We all know that. So I need to find all the information. So I start with a Google search. Where are the gyms? What are the things the gyms can do? How many times are they open? How much does it cost? All of that. Okay, what's my reason for doing it? Primarily, my reason was my daughter needs to work out. Mm-hmm. And if she has social anxiety. So if I go with her, she will go. So it needs to be a gym I want to do. So my health and wellness journey is really so that my daughter will do it. So I need to like the gym. So now we're in a different category of gyms. We're not at, you know, $39 a month or $5, whatever. We're in like Lisa wants to go to a really nice gym. Mm-hmm. So the gym I picked is 30 minutes from our house, 20 to 30 minutes. That's far away. There's a gym 5 minutes from our house. I joined that one. I don't like that one. So I was like, in contemplation, will I actually go to that? Or I guess I'm in preparation. Will I actually go to that gym? What would make me go to that gym? How often would I go to gym? What is my cost per use analysis? What would get Abby to go to the gym? So all of this I'm doing because when I say to my husband that I want to do this, he will give me a yes, no answer, and there's no discussion whatsoever. Like, mm-hmm. he will either say yes or no, and there's no, so I have to know for sure. I'm a verbal processor. You guys watch mm-hmm. me. I talk everything through. I can't talk it through with Greg because by sentence number two, he has an answer and I'm shut down. Yeah. And he does not want to pay for a gym ever. He thinks it's a waste. Yeah. So I have to go in 100% sure this is what I want before I can take action. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I picked the gym I wanted. We had to go do something else. I think see a lawyer about our taxes or something. We were having a date day. We were on our way home by this gym. I said, let's just go in and look at it for Abby. Mm-hmm. Got him in there, got him with the salesperson. I already knew I wanted to do it. And then we just signed her up and I said, I'll do it with her. And I signed up too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the preparation, it's not just preparing yourself, but also who are the decision makers? Who else is going to do this with you, hold you back or propel you forward? Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously I'm a questioner, so I think about it yeah. too much, but I think when people are joining the 100-day program, they do the same thing. I've done this in the past. It didn't really work. It's a lot of money. Am I going to do the payment plan? Am I going to pay in full? Am I going to join now? Am I going to join the next time it opens up? Do I need to go all access? What if I do my Sunday basket first? I think there's a lot of things that happen in this preparation stage before people move to action.
Yeah. And that's good that you recognize kind of where your people are in terms of this thought process and recognize that, you know, certain products that you offer are a bigger step than others. And so you mm-hmm. offer, you know, offering everything kind of a la carte. I really appreciate that you offer the Sunday Basket podcast for free first so folks can try it. Is this mm-hmm. before I invest this money, let me try it out. Preparation phase often involves some baby steps like that, like taking a trial at a gym, like going, they sometimes give a 1 day pass, just go try it. You mm-hmm. never, you no commitment. If you don't like it, you never have to go back, but let's just try it and see, can I envision myself as the kind of person that does this action? So that's, you know, preparation phase. And I think you can't underestimate how important a good, you know, taking some time in that preparation phase is, because when you move to the next step, which is action, you know, a lot of your success, action is a very fragile phase, generally speaking, and the strength of action comes from the preparation stage before. So action is where you're, you know, you've thought about it, you've convinced yourself why this is something you need to change, to act on. You've prepared yourself, you've done the research, you've got all the approvals, everything is in line, and then you start to do the thing. And you through action includes making modifications as you go. So, you know, I'm not a morning person, so I'm going to work out in the afternoon. Or, you know, maybe I overshot saying I'm going to work out 7 days. I'm going to aim for 3. And you kind of start to do the thing, get to feel how it goes, and then you start to make modifications to it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I joined the gym. So my action was, or my preparation was, number one reason I'm doing all this is because Abby needs to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. So, and she needs very clear rules. So the rule is, if you go to the gym, you're allowed to get something at the snack bar, like an acai smoothie or something. Mm-hmm. And if she goes to the gym, but she doesn't work out, she's not allowed to get the money for the smoothie. Mm-hmm. So I made those rules. So then for the action for me, I walk in a treadmill. I'm driving 20 to 30 minutes to walk on a treadmill. It's really crazy. And I've never worked out, and I'm not a worker outer. So I was like, okay, I'm going to walk on a treadmill, but there has to be more to it. So I tried the swimming. I already owned a swimsuit. So I swam the first time, I don't know how many laps, less than 10. The second time, the third time, I realized that was not the thing for me, because then you've got chlorine in your hair and you're wet and you can't run an errand on the way home. And like, there were just so many reasons why swimming was not going to work. So I kept walking on the treadmill for another 2 months. Now embrace is over. I'm like, okay, now what am I going to do? Because I need a goal, obviously. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try yoga. So I decided to try yoga. And when I was walking on the treadmill, I was doing it in jean shorts and a t-shirt, to which my friends were very, they're like, it's a really nice club. They're like, you've got to be kidding me. So I went and I bought a little like skirty thing, like a little black skirty thing. It has like bike, whatever. They're like, you're walking in a skirt. Yes, I look ridiculous. I was also dancing on the treadmill. I was fine with that. So I go to do yoga. I clearly do not own yoga attire. So I wore this same outfit I used to wear on the treadmill. I went and I bought a yoga mat, because you have to buy that. Okay. So I bought the one that was 12 millimeters thick, because I like cushion. I Insta-storied doing this. I get there. I'm like, this is fine. I go up to where I think the yoga is. It's not there. I watch the people with mats walk somewhere else. I was like, shoot, I don't even know where to go. And all of their mats are the really, really thin, like 3 millimeter kind. I look like I'm going in there with a sleeping bag. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're wearing leggings. I don't own leggings. I was like, okay, I'm not wearing the right clothes. My mat looks like I'm going to go on a camp out. I don't even know where I'm going. I honestly just wanted to leave, but I had already Insta-storied that I was going. Yeah. So for all of you, what is that? Obligers? You need to like tell people so that you'll do it. I was pulling in all the Gretchen Rubin things, the rebel, the obliger, all of them. Upholder. So I go to the yoga and it's smelly in there, because they had just done hot yoga and it was hot. Oh. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am so out of my element. Like I feel the stress in my body right now. I was like, I look weird. I have the wrong size mat. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not going to be able to do. And I forgot water. I had to go buy like a $3 water. Oh, and I'm carrying around my purse. And I just like, you are so out of your element. Why are you doing this? I did the basic level one, like, I guess it's called yin. It was really great. I almost fell asleep twice. Mm-hmm. It was really nice. It was relaxing. And the whole time I'm doing it, I'm arguing with myself, like, why are you doing this? Who are you proving this to? You don't even have to do yoga. Why are you so far away from home? This took you 2 hours. Like, I'm having all these conversations with myself. I'm like, but you're relaxing. I'm like, yeah, but am I building any muscle? Like, what is the end goal? Like, am I hitting a goal? And I'm like arguing with myself during yoga. And I just said, look to myself, look, we're going to do it 8 times. You're going to do it 8 times. Mm-hmm. But in the past, what I would have done, because I joined the gym that was only 5 minutes from my house. I joined the gym. I bought all of the clothing before I went. I went one time. I had to pay for a year and I never went back. But this time when I joined the gym, I paid more money. It's farther away. But I keep going back and trying new things. And if yoga doesn't work, that's fine. I also realize that when I do it the next time, I'm going out to dinner with friends. I literally can do this right after dinner on my way home. Like, I don't get sweaty. It doesn't matter. So the second thing I'm doing is on the treadmill. I'm like, okay, well, what can be a goal other than working through that Embrace playlist? Now I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try to shave off a minute off of a 5K every time I do it, which somebody told me is a really ambitious goal. So, all right, I'm not going to like kill myself to shave a minute off, but just like keeping track of my time. I also know throughout the month, sometimes I have more energy than other times, or if I'm tired, and just kind of observing my body when I walk a 5K. If I always walk a 5K, how long do I do it? Is that relative to where I am in my cycle? Like just learning more about my body as I do it and creating little goals along the way. So that preparation and action, in the past, I would have prepared so much and bought perfectly that then when I took the action, if it wasn't the end result that I thought it would be, I would give up right away. So I understand when you say it's very delicate. And when I originally created the 100-day program, I wouldn't even tell you any additional things you could buy like at Walmart or Home Depot or anything, because I, in the past, would go buy all the stuff and invest even further in stuff but not get the results. And so then I would feel like I was out even more energy, money without action. However, I found that was not a good answer because some people do need the supplies in order to take the action. But I love this conversation about how action is so fragile and you have to know yourself. I will always buy and purchase stuff and then put the effort in the action second. Some people will put the effort in the action first and hold off so long on buying stuff that the transformation takes longer because they just didn't buy the right piece they needed to solidify the transaction.
Well, and also one thing I noticed, you know, as you're talking, this isn't your first climb up the ladder.
Yes, right. Exactly.
You've been up the staircase before. You know where the squeaky step is. You know where that nail is sticking up. And so you're trying something different. Each time that you climb up, you build upon it, which is critical. That's a critical skill. So, you know, I'll finish up just talking about the steps of change. So the last one is maintenance. You know, researchers will try to, again, they'll try to like define it. Like if you've been doing the thing for 6 months or longer, then you're considered in maintenance. You know, you can assign yourself a deadline like that and, you know, use it as a milestone to work for. But in real life, I think the stages are much more fluid in terms of timeline. But yeah, maintenance is kind of what we're working for, because then it's a behavior that you are used to, the resistance gets lower and the ease of it gets better, and you start to see the benefits of doing it. You're happy with the decision that you've made. Things just get a lot easier, and that's kind of where we want to be. And so, you know, at this point, I think it's important to talk about, like you said, like this is a ladder. This is a set of stairs that we have to go through so many times. And I want to emphasize that it's so critical to see this as part of the process and see this as a way, you know, you going up multiple times is not failure. I think I see a lot of people and it kind of breaks my heart because they're so hard on themselves.
Yes.
And I'm behind. Yeah. You know, and it's like you're down at the bottom, and depending on how your outlook is, it can either be easier or more difficult to get back up. If you have an outlook like, hey, I walked up the stairs, I walked back down the stairs again, but I know I can get up the stairs. So let's try something different. Let's try something new. Let's keep trying. And eventually, if I keep trying long enough, I'm going to get to maintenance. You know, if you are consciously thinking those thoughts, it just makes it so much easier to make progress. If you, you know, you're finally taking action, you're feeling good, and then something happens, life happens, you get kicked back down to contemplation again. And then a lot of the tendency, I think, can be to think of that as a failure. I tried, I didn't succeed, therefore it's just not for me. This isn't something that I can do. And I hate to hear folks thinking about that. So I hope that by shedding some light on these stages And I know folks out there as they're listening are thinking about how many times with whatever behavior it is that you've gone up mm-hmm. and down and up and down. For myself, so I was at a point with our last apartment where I was, really organized. Everything was right where it had to be. Life is smooth. And then we moved and got kicked right back down to contemplation. And I'm like, I've got other things to deal with before I can focus on getting this house organized. And so we've been here for 6 weeks or so. And so now we're just like putting the systems up in place and figuring out the new layout of the house and how it's going to work again. So it just is something that throughout your life, throughout your day, without even realizing you're going up and down these stairs with everything. And you just got to give yourself grace and don't underestimate that preparation.
So one of the things that I think people in Organize 365 struggle with, especially if they go all access, is because there are so many pieces in all access and they want to work on them in an organized way to get through it in 12 to 18 months to get their house organized. But from what you're saying, I think it sounds more like, okay, the Sunday basket piece, you prepare for that, you start to take action, you do that for about 6 weeks, and then your Sunday basket ends up in maintenance. So then you prepare and you start the 100 days and you're still maintaining the Sunday basket and you're doing the 100 days in action. And either you hit a roadblock and you stop the 100 days or whatever, you drop out of the 100 days and then you pick up a binder and you keep doing that. And as you keep going through, eventually each of these pieces, your paper, your house, your Sunday basket, move into maintenance over the course of the 18 months. But some of them will drop back down into preparation, or mm-hmm. you'll stop doing the Sunday basket and be like, oh, I've got this. I don't need the Sunday basket. Speaking as someone who's done that many times. And a couple weeks later, you're like, why isn't this working? Oh yeah, I stopped doing the Sunday basket. I need to start doing that again. Mm-hmm. So you go prepare, you deep dive, you really do a good clean out in action, and then you get that one back up to maintenance. It's kind of like keeping all these plates spinning once you get them started.
Yeah. And it can be a lot. And, I for myself, I give myself I don't assign a timeline to any of these for myself. I was in contemplation for years when it came to organizing. Like, it was good enough. There wasn't anything mm-hmm. bumping me up. It was in the back of my mind. Like, I could be more organized. For myself, it wasn't until I got, I was working on a research study as a research assistant, and I got promoted to be the project manager. It's like my first promotion, and project management is just like professional organizing for a project. So it just, that unleashed my inner Leslie Knope, and I was on fire with binders and calendars and SOPs. Everything we did had an SOP. And so that put the thought into my mind, like, hey, if organizing at work is so successful, because I really was very successful once I implemented those changes. If that helped me at work, imagine what it could do for my personal life. So I had that thought, and then I got married, and I got a new job, and I had a baby, and I started my master's thesis, and I was like, okay, we'll put a pin in that. That's something I'll address later. It's always there if I need it. But I, in my mind, being the nerd that I am, I'm thinking, I'm going to hang out in contemplation on this one. And you can do that. You can just be in the contemplation phase and collect information and gather it so that when the time is right, for me, it was when I started a new job that had a more flexible schedule. My daughter was about 18 months, 2 years, and she was a little more independent. And I thought, okay, now I have the bandwidth to actually prepare for doing this. And then I moved on. But understanding that you can just do what you need to do. And if you need to hang out, if you are a questioner and what you need to do is hang out in that preparation phase for a long time, don't give yourself analysis paralysis, but just don't be afraid to hang out there and do what you need to do to feel ready to move on to the next stage.
Yeah, I think one of the things I do that people say is very helpful is I never say you have to get rid of anything. Mm-hmm. I almost say if you're questioning it, keep it. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is you stay in that pre-contemplation about getting rid of that thing for one more cycle of the 100-day program. And then 4 months later, when we hit that area again and that physical item is still there, your brain has been working on it. And you're like, why didn't I get rid of it?
Scared of it.
Yeah. And so then it's so easy to get rid of it. versus if you just got rid of it when you're like, oh, I'm not sure, it would have been hard. And so I think even in action, you can have some things working in that pre-contemplation stage, and then it just makes it easier to take action later. I love the three times through the 100-day program every single year. Like, I still go through all of these spaces in my house, that constant spiraling of going through pre-contemplation, action, maintenance, pre-contemplation, action, maintenance. Like, we're never going to get done. Mm-hmm. We're just going to keep spiraling through these quicker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and actually, you know, I've described this as a set of stairs or ladder, but it often, like, if you Google it, you'll see that it's actually depicted as a cycle. You know, it's something
around
and around.
How cool.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's part of the process. I know it can get really frustrating to know that, like, part of the plan is that you're going to stop making progress. Like, that's, but you really are, but you're kind of not. So yeah, I get it. It's not.
Yeah. Easy. My new phrase is people are people, not robots. Like, when I'm thinking about family, when I'm thinking about team, when I'm thinking about the organized 365 audience, like, on paper, when you're planning something out, it just seems like it's going to go X, Y, Z. But in real life is messy and complicated. And if you're just taking the next step forward, even if it doesn't seem like you are, you're constantly keeping things moving, and things in motion tend to stay in motion. And be okay with going up, down, sideways. As long as you keep going, you will end up with that change that you are striving for.
Yep, that's it.
Rachel, this has been so cool. So people can find you in the Organize 365 Facebook group, right?
Yep, I'm there, and I'll be monitoring. If there's any questions, just post it, and I think there'll be some interesting conversations to come from this, so I'm looking forward to getting hearing everyone's feedback.
Yeah, thank you so much, and a couple months ago, or about half a year ago, we had someone that explained that the Sunday basket actually followed the cycle of psychology, so mm-hmm. I know that a lot of what we're doing follows other models or theories. You know, just the three times through the 100-day program mirrors the Montessori learning. It also mirrors the classical style of education. So as you're listening to the podcast, you're like, oh, this is related to this kind of theory. If you'd like to come on and share those with us, I'm very receptive to that, because different people will hear things differently. So just give us an email, lisa@organize365.com. Rachel, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to finally be on one of my favorite podcasts.
Aw, thanks.